Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. Our guest this evening is Tolek. He is a public speaker. His website is www.andromedacouncil.com. He's a contactee. He's now an event organizer as well. And I'd like to welcome Tolek back to Ohio Exopolitics. Tolek, how are you this evening?
Mark, I'm doing great. And it's great to hear your voice again.
How have you been? It's been a couple of years, I think.
Yeah, it has. Life has been very interesting. It's thrown me a few challenges, which I guess is always part of life. I'll make this part brief. 5 out of the last 7 years and the last 3 straight, over the course of many months, each winter I've been taking care of my now 86-year-old mom. And that, as her cognitive abilities have diminished significantly, it's provided many more challenges on a human relationship front. So it's been interesting. Sometimes it's been very trying, but I figured I was her first, so the least I can do is help out for a little while during the latter part of her life. And I'll be transferring the care of my mom over to my sisters in about another 2.5 weeks. I've done as much as I can. She's gone down that dementia road so far that I've given her about the best care that I can give, given the time that I have.
Are you still in Arizona?
I've been here in South Florida for like the past 3 years, and I'm actually returning.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm returning to Arizona in about 3 or 4 weeks, and excited about my return to Arizona, actually.
Do you miss Arizona?
That answer has 2 parts. I'm going to miss the balmy breezes and the tropical nature of South Florida. Mm-hmm. I'll miss the geographical beauty of this land so close to the ocean. It's not so much that I miss the desert per se, but I miss the energy of Arizona and the people and the mindset there and how they interact with each other. It's a place in this country that I've found is very open, very willing to consider new ideas, thoughts, and concepts. It's a place that pretty much thrives on live and let live. And that's not the case on the East Coast at all. Not even close. So I'll be happy to return to the West.
I went to Sedona a couple of years back. What do you think of Sedona?
I fell in love with Sedona the first time I arrived there. It was the early autumn of 1987 when Sedona was still a village. And I remember walking around going, wow, this is cool. What an amazing area. That's when the skies were always blue. They weren't spraying anything. And now the Y is no longer a Y. It's a T intersection. There's either a Hilton or a Hyatt up on the hill. I talked to a friend of mine who was driving through Sedona just this past Sunday, and she said, do you know that there are 5 roundabouts between Uptown and 179? She's like, it's crazy. There's traffic everywhere. So I won't be moving to Sedona.
those roundabouts are strange if you're not used to them. Indeed.
Yeah, I think I only saw one when I met you and I was visiting Ohio with my sister a few years ago. There's only one out there now. Up in Massachusetts, there are a bunch of them. They call them rotaries. But it's strange to see that many roundabouts in a span of about, I think, 3.5 to 4 miles, like from the center of Sedona to get to I-17. It's about a 15-minute drive. And to see, I think there's 5 or 6 roundabouts now. It's nuts. So, I don't know that it's helped traffic any, but...
Yeah, they're weird. You have to get used to them. Sedona has its own kind of beauty, though, in its own way, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Just from an aesthetic beauty, from the contrast of... And we still get them, you know, the blue skies and then the red rocks as a contrast. It is pretty amazing. The air in Arizona is, of course, drier than it is here on the East Coast, except during, you know, monsoon season, which hits, I think, sometime like July and then August.
Mm-hmm.
But it's I don't know how else to put it, but it's the energy. The energy of that land is distinctly unique. I'm sure there are other spots in the country like it where there are vortexes and portals. But by the time I was in my 30s, I had traveled probably three-quarters of this country. I'm now in my 50s. And I remember the first time in 1987 where I had taken the exit off of 17 and taken 179 as I started to come into the village of Oak Creek. I pulled off at one of the turnoffs, just kind of like on the side of the road, just outside of Bell Rock. I remember getting out of my car and standing there and feeling like I had come home. Now, back in 1987, I didn't know what that felt like in ways that I could describe it today, but energetically, it felt very comfortable. The energy of the area, the look of the land felt very much like home, and I still feel like that today. And I'm not talking about when I'm in uptown Sedona where all the commercial stores are, but just sort of when I'm out walking and hiking and visiting friends and that kind of thing. I had the 2016 Transformational Shift Conference in October in Tucson, and I decided that after that conference was over, I was going to treat myself and spend some time in Sedona and do some hiking and visiting with some friends, so I did that. So I was able to freshly visit Sedona for the first time in 7 or 8 years last autumn. And it was, the land is still as exquisite as it was many years ago in the 80s or 90s, you know, just being out in the land and feeling the vibration and the fresh air of Arizona. There was no spraying going on when we were there, you know, no chemtrails the few days that I was there, but I enjoyed it. It was a great experience.
Have you ever been out to Mount Adams in Washington State?
I haven't, no. I've flown over the three big ones, Mount Hood, Mount Adams, and one other. And the last time I was effectively in the business world, my business partners happened to be in Portland. So
really?
I was standing on the 25th story of this building in Portland, and one of my partners said, "Hey, turn around." Like, we were outside on a terrace. I'm like, "How come?" He said, "Just turn around." So I turned around, and there's Mount Hood, you know, big as life, sticking out of the landscape. Yeah, my jaw dropped. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. But no, I haven't experienced Mount Adams yet. The closest I've come to any of that is a conference I spoke at in 2015 in Mount Shasta. That was a great experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mount Shasta is fantastic. Tell us about that.
It was great. I spoke for Rob Potter's Mount Shasta Summer Conference in the summer of 2016, August, I believe. Michael Sala and I sat and had dinner together. Alex Collier spoke. He and I had a chance to spend a couple nights together, which was a lot of fun. We happened to be boarded in the same house. There was a woman there who was putting up some of the guests. So a couple of us stayed in her home, and Alex and I happened to be in that house. So we had a great time spending some evenings with those folks. Ted Marr, Craig Campobasso, and a few other people. In speaking with Rob Potter after the conference, he told me that they attained about 225 attendees, and it happened at the Methodist camp, which is sort of across from Mount Shasta. You can see it sort of through the Long Needle pine trees. But on one of the days off, I was driven up to a lake. I think it's called Crystal Lake up there. Absolutely beautiful. Pure, pristine air. There were some friends that took me up in their SUV, and we went up to Panther Meadow, and we walked Panther Meadow. The energy was very high up there. You know, it's alpine country. So it was a pretty neat experience. The most fascinating thing that I experienced out of that whole event was that I think it was on Sunday or Monday, after all the campfires at night, people were handing around their smartphones, and we were saying, I was seeing at least in the tens, if not more, tens upon tens, of, as in T-E-N-S, tens of digital smartphone photographs of people around these campfires with orbs, little dancing orbs, energy balls of light, surrounding all of these people. And, it's not like there were a few. There were bunches of these orbs that, around all these people who were enjoying each other's company and laughing, and there were a couple of people with guitars and playing music and stuff. And it was a great weekend. That conference, I think, lasted 5 days. I'm pretty sure that Rob's next conference went only two or three. And he had Corey Good and I think Michael Sala, one other person, last summer. So Mount Shasta seems to be a pretty good area for conferences. I'm going to be doing a two-day conference in Mount Shasta. Let me go to my calendar. I can tell you and everybody else. The weekend of June the 10th, it'll be Saturday, half the day from like 4 p.m. until who knows when in the evening. And then all day Sunday on the 11th. And we're going to be doing it at the Mount Shasta Community Center. And Tracy Houghton of Universal Cosmic Mind will be speaking. There's a retired diplomat in town by the name of Louis Elbinger. He owns the Silk Road Chai Shop. He'll be speaking. And he'll be addressing specifically this time of change that we have with this gentleman, Donald Trump, who's president, and all of the shifts that he's making happen in the country at the time. So that'll happen this summer, June 10th and 11th in Mount Shasta. And that community center is downtown, and Mount Shasta downtown is a great little place. It's kind of like Berkeley back in the 60s or Sedona back in the 80s. It's still a quaint little tourist town with about six or seven crystal shops and a whole bunch of other interesting places. So it's a kick in the pants, that's for sure.
Now, when you were at Mount Shasta, did you see any ships coming out of that eastern slope?
I didn't see any ships, but I definitely felt when we were hiking up in Panther Meadow, specifically in and around the area of the stream, in the woods, as compared to out in the open, because you have to traverse some woods on the way to the meadow and back from it. I could definitely feel some multiple presences of beings in the area. I could feel them. I didn't see them, but I could.
That's something about Washington State up there. I felt the same kind of thing. It's hard to put into words if you haven't felt it.
Yeah. Did you happen to go to James Gillian's? Were you up at James Gillian's?
I went there twice, and even when there's no one around you, I'm always feeling like somebody is right there, but I just can't see him.
Yeah.
Can't explain it.
Yeah. I was, just as reference point, I was speaking with Jeff Godfrey, who's a friend of mine from Tucson, and he attended that conference. He didn't speak at that one. And he pulled me aside. I think it was midday Sunday? Midday, late in the afternoon, before the conference was over. He's like, hey, do you realize, like, there's a just big, massive ship over this hotel? I'm like, yeah, it's our people. He said, no, it's big. It's like 1,200 feet across. And I said, yeah, I know. They said that they would be here paying attention to what's going on. So, and I had a number of other people tell me different things that they were sensing and feeling. There were a number of people in the audience who could see different higher dimensional beings in the room as we were having the conference. So I feel blessed. Yeah, it's been kind of interesting. beginning this process of not only speaking at conferences, but now holding my own. By the way, if you decide, before any more time happens in this conversation, if you decide to travel any time this summer, whether it's Portland, Oregon, or Mount Shasta, or Spokane, I'll make sure that there's a free VIP ticket set aside for you. Just, you know, give me
Seriously?
A shout, let me know. Well, yeah, you're welcome to join me wherever. And if you want to speak, I'll introduce you. Just come on over, and I'll put you up there, and you can say hi to everybody.
That's awesome, man. I might take you up on that.
Yeah, take a look at the list. Let me know. Sure, you're welcome to.
Definitely. Yeah, I really like it up there. I went up to James Gilliland's ranch twice. It's been a couple years back, and it was really big then, but I think he was getting some pressure from the locals to kind of tone it down a bit. Have you heard anything about that?
I didn't hear that. I spoke with James during that time,
mm-hmm.
and it was a difficult time of many challenges for him. I do remember that.
Really?
There were a lot of things going on, yeah. That's not the case today. Today he sounds much more light-voiced, light-hearted. He's spending some time in Hawaii. He was speaking out there and visiting out there. I need to contact him. He and I haven't talked in a couple of years, and I'm doing an event in collaboration with Chris and Sherry Geo, who used to be with Truth Frequency Radio. Now they're doing Beyond the Veil, and they're now in Spokane. So we're going to do a weekend event with them in Spokane, Washington, the next weekend on June 17th. Now, I know Spokane that's farther inland. That's like close to the Idaho border. I don't know where that is in relation to eSETI.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Do you have any idea?
I'd have to look on the map and double check.
But I'll ask James. I'd have just have him come over. Hey, listen, I'll give you some gas money. Come on over. Join us. I'm sure he'd have a good time. But he's a really good man. He spoke at that Mount Shasta conference in 2015, and we sat next to each other on the panel table, and you could just feel the warm-hearted, kind energy coming from him. The little time I felt together, and we talked outside for a couple of times, and he's just a good, warm, kind-hearted man, so what you see is what you get. Now, I want to apologize for interrupting you. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say the same thing. All the people up there, it's almost like a second family when you go up to Mount Adams and you meet friends you just didn't know you had.
Yeah. That's what it felt when I was hanging out with James and speaking with him and a bunch of other people. I have not been to eSETI, and I should ask James and say, hey, you know, if you're doing an event, I'll come up, you know. But I'd love to spend some time with him up there. I did spend some time with Don Daniels. He and Sierra Nablina produce this radio show called Galactic University. I forget. I think it's called, like, Beyond the Cosmic Human, something like that. So I was speaking in Colorado last summer, and Don said, come on, I want to take you up this mountaintop. I want to have a sighting. I want to go have a sighting. Okay, Don, fine. So we leave Evergreen, Colorado, and drive like 25 minutes. He brings us up to, I don't know, 10,000 feet and some change. He said, see that over there? That mountain's like 14,000 feet. Well, it was just, we were supposed to have like 7 to 9 people. It was me, Don, and 2 other people. So we're sitting in this field, kind of like on top of this mesa of this mountain. Don's like, come on, let's do a meditation. I want us to have contact. So I said, Don, we don't need a meditation. Take your camera, you know, take your cell phone, point it over there, over across my right shoulder. He's like, really? I said, yeah, just point the camera over there. There's an opening. Just point it across my right shoulder. I bet you get something. Oh, I'll tell you what he got. He got a lens image full of three giant orbs. Like one of them was about 8 to 9 feet in diameter, sort of like a globe. In the, it was huge. They're like in the center of the photo. Then there was another orb on the left-hand corner, like at 4 to 5 feet, and then another orb in the right-hand corner at like 5 to 6 feet. So I then sort of telepathically asked my people, I'm like, okay, who are these guys? And the big guy in the center was an energetic version of his traveling self, a high-level Arcturian ambassador that wanted to come down and hang out and find out what we were talking about. And apparently the other two guys, and the only way I can say this, the other two guys were essentially people from the Arcturus system who are groupies. And this guy who's the ambassador said, I can't seem to get rid of these guys. They sort of like follow me wherever I go. They must enjoy my adventure. And it's kind of, that was the message that they gave me about this particular image. I'll send it to you sometime. It's an amazing shot. Big monster orb in the middle, and a guy on the left, and a one on the right. And you can, and now, on further inspection later on, I was doing a close-up. I had it in my computer, and I was kind of zooming in. I could actually see a couple of faces of little higher-dimensional guys inside those images as well. So that was kind of cool. When you least expect it, this stuff shows up.
Tola, can you tell us a little bit about your connection with Native Americans?
I'd be happy to. If there's anybody that you've spoken with who attended my my conference last October in Tucson, I was fortunate enough and blessed to have essentially 9/10 or 7/8 of the Native Americans that organize and produce the Star Knowledge conferences. The only gentleman that didn't make it was Chief Golden Light Eagle. But his planning partner, Grandmother Silver Star, Pete Jackson, and a few other people from the Star Knowledge conference events spoke at my Transformational Shift event. And it was an amazing experience. What's the connection? I was raised in the Northeast, but in the summer of 69, Dad shut down his business, if you will. He brought Mom and I and my younger brother and my little sister all the way across country. And I remember being in Arizona and being in Wyoming, being in Montana, and looking out and seeing the blue sky and going, oh, my God. I know this country. I know this land. This is incredible. So I've always had a connection to the American West and the Southwest, intuitively. But when I started this process of learning about my own contact people from what we call the Andromeda Council, most of those contact people, at least 4 out of 5 of them, they're originally from the planet Dakote, D-A-K-O-T-E. And so, therefore, it's no mistake that the states of North Dakota and South Dakota are named as they are because, essentially, and there are others as well, but the people of the American West and Southwest, pretty much from the Rockies West, generally, all of those Native Americans, Lakota, Dakota, Nakota, Apache, Comanche, Cherokee, Chippewa, and on, Tohono O'odham, they are descendants of the people from the planet Dakote that emigrated here to this planet about 50,000 years ago. And when they first got here, they arrived at a spaceport in what we mythically call the land of Lemuria or Mu, which is, I guess, down in the South Pacific, in the Southern Pacific. They landed down there. There were a number of experiences, of course. That landmass fell, and those people migrated through Indonesia, up along the China coast, into Japan, up into Alaska, what's known as the Bering Strait, down into what we call North America. There's an incredible migration that happened by those people into North America. And so all of the people, at least all of the Western or Southwestern people that we look at and call Native Americans or Indians, they're all descendants from the people of Dakota. And for those people who are not familiar with Dakota, in the Taygeta star system, which is one of the seven major stars of the Pleiades, Taygeta is one of the stars. Dakota is one of four planets that revolve around that sun, that star. There's Vela, Pyra, Dakota, and Era, E-R-R-A. Those are the four planets of the Taygeta star system. And Dakota is one of them. So that's the Dakota Native American connection. And I actually now, I've been playing it since 2012. I play the Native American flute now, and I've composed and played four songs out of an album of 12. I'll be finished someday. I'll probably finish it when I get to Arizona. I haven't played that much here. My time has taken up considerably by mom. Quite an experience.
Tell us about the planet Dakota. Is it similar to Earth?
Yes, in that it has a lot of water, like Earth does. You could consider it to be much like Earth. It's a little bigger. There's no tilt of the axis, so the whole planet is temperate. The temperatures are generally, you know, what we would call in the mid-70s to the low 80s, like 82 or 84. The climate is consistent with what we would call the Mediterranean. And as a planet, it has nine continents, which are much like Australia, where Australia is an island and a continent. What essentially has nine big islands of different sizes and shapes that are each individually continents, and also each individually, if you will, countries. And the governing body, the people who are pretty much, you know, responsible for, if you will, running things, are on the island called Katrina, C-A-T-R-I-E-N-A. I'm just doing that from memory. But it's predominantly Mediterranean feel. Of course, it's a little bit colder at the poles, you know, the North Pole and the South Pole of that planet, but predominantly it's a Mediterranean climate. And the people, they all look like Native Americans, albeit tall ones. You know, the women are generally like 6'6", 6'8", through 7 feet, and the men are 7'4", 7'6", 7'8", maybe some are 8 feet tall. But they all look like good-looking Native Americans, you know, men and women.
Yeah. And any forests on Dakota?
Yes, but they all look like South Florida. Hibiscus, banana trees, palm trees, aquamarine water. Yeah, it's a beautiful place. Dolphins, porpoise in all of the water, all of the oceans. Fish of different types. Yeah, it's a very cool planet.
And why did these people come to Earth?
Ah, good question. There were approximately 200 people in an expedition-shaped, sized craft. Scientists, geologists, sociologists, people from different walks of life. They chose, a lot of the people that chose to leave Dakota are probably not a lot different than anybody else who says, you know what, I've been living in the Northeast my whole life and I need to go experience something different. Or I've been living in Ohio my whole life and I want to go to Washington State. You know, who knows what the different reasons are that motivate people to move, but they said, all right, you know, you need a team of people, and this is a good time to for us to establish a colony on Earth. We will go. We will do our best not to interfere, but we'll observe. We'll observe the people's customs, their growth. It's my understanding that when this happened, as we would calculate it, 50,000 years ago, that they had some pretty advanced technology even then. So they had to do a really good job of concealing that technology from the population on the planet at the time. So they were, and they pretty, from what I understand, they pretty much kept to themselves.
How far, how many light years away from Earth was Dakota?
You know what? I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know. How far is the Pleiades constellation from Earth?
Oh, that's like 420 light years or something crazy like that.
Okay, well, yeah. And if you look at the Pleiades, and think of the Pleiades as a clock face, you'd find you find the Taygeta star system upper right hand corner, like at 1 or 2 o'clock. And you can see, you know, there's Merope, Alcyon, Altair, and a few others. Well, Taygeta is one of those stars, and like I said, it's like at 1 or 2 o'clock, and Dakota is one of those planets. So that's your number. It's, and they, of course, they don't travel by linear distance. They use their advanced jump gate technology to key in the coordinates, and they go blip blip, and they're here. I mean, they don't travel. Yeah, they don't travel in a linear fashion. When the guy who's the commander of the primary Andromeda Council biosphere took me back in time from 1840s. I felt some sensation lifting in his craft, lifting off of Earth. But once we got away from blue sky and it became black, and then we took off, there was no sensation of the ship. I remember taking off, and then, oomph, in another blink, you know, the snap of a finger, we were again over Earth. And we had gone through time. We went from 1993 to the 1840s. And he just went, whatever he did to his panel, he dialed in some coordinates, and we just jumped.
Hmm.
It's like a lot of scientists say, they fold space. Take point A, point B, and a piece of paper and fold it. That's how we did it. It probably took us more time to lift off the planet's surface than it did for us to take the whole trip. Yeah.
Did the people from Dakota, did they kind of lose their technology? Did they, I mean, or is it hidden here on Earth still, or did they choose to grow away from technology, or what?
Wow, interesting question. Based on that question that I asked, what I learned about them is that very much like the Native Americans, they lived, even though they had technology, really advanced technology back then, they still chose to live in a quiet way, in connection with the land. So they, you know, they grew crops. They spent a lot of time, of course, in the outdoors, in the fresh air. Keep in mind, they're also what we would consider to be very emotionally and very spiritually advanced for them 50,000 years ago. And so they weren't here in the pursuit of trying to attain or upgrade their technology. Their technology simply was a tool or were tools to help them in their everyday lives, but they were here to experience Earth, experience the people of Earth, observe the people of Earth, observe their own growth and their own patterns and the way they interacted with each other. So it's pretty much about experiencing life on Earth as it was 50,000 years ago.
Are the people from...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Are the people from Dakota still here? Are there any of them that are still here?
The people, well, I guess there are two ways to answer that question. And then I'm going to, the first thing I'll do is answer your question about technology. Because it's sensitive information, I won't reveal where. But I do
okay.
know that they did bury pieces that, when assembled together, will make a complete Stargate. They buried pieces of a Stargate. I can say this much. It's in the American West.
Okay.
Now, does that mean Arizona? No, it doesn't mean Arizona. But I do know that, the pieces of this Stargate are in a particular area somewhere in the American West. I've been told that at some point in the near future, I'll be told where, so I can go find these pieces and do whatever I'm supposed to do with them. But in any case, so did they leave behind some technology? Yes. As to, are there any people from Dakota? Well, the first answer is, are there descendants of people from the planet Dakota? Yes, absolutely, as I mentioned earlier. They can more immediately be found in the Dakota, Lakota, Nakota people. You would see aspects of the Dakota people there. I can tell you also that in at some point in the future of this planet, people from the planet Dakota that are affiliated with the Council will come here to Earth, and they'll first speak with the Native Americans all across the West and the Southwest. They'll then speak with the Native Americans in the East, then to talk to the rest of the people in society. And the reason they're going to do that is because the Native Americans and other indigenous people across the globe have as part of their mythology and their culture their own unique star stories from one group of Native people to another about people from the stars. It's in their own origin stories that they're people from the stars that are part of their culture. So that's why the people from Dakota will talk to the Native people first about what's going to happen, in what order, what they'll likely see will take place, that kind of thing.
Are any of the people from Dakota reincarnating on Earth?
Ah, yes, absolutely. Sierra Neblina from Colorado, who's affiliated with Galactic University, her soul essence is originally from the planet Dakota. Sherry from Montana, who I've interviewed a couple of times, her soul essence is originally from Dakota. I have a very good friend, I would call a lifetime adult friend, by the name of Adana. She and I met in Tucson in 1995, spring of 1995. We've been friends for a long time. Over the course of the past few years, we've learned that both she and I, back on planet Dakota, when our spirit essence was first birthed, if you will, where we first experienced life, we are brother and sister back on the planet Dakota. And we happen, which is kind of cool, we happen to both be on planet Earth at this time, and we're not related at all. You know, physically, our families, there's no connection between her family and my family at all. So you actually ask a good question because it brings up a really interesting point. It's my understanding, based on a number of conversations with different people, including higher dimensional star folks, that for approximately the past 100,000 years, people have been coming from, if you will, souls have been coming from different star systems, from different dimensions, to experience human life on this planet for about 100,000 years. And that comprises about 70 to 75% of all souls on this planet living today. And the other 25% or so those souls go way, 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 way back to the incarnation, the original incarnation of Earth as a higher dimensional world, eons and eons and eons ago. And even those original souls came from somewhere else first. So even the most original souls that are here on planet Earth, which is, like I said, 20 or 25% of them, they were here first. But again, it's about 70 or 75% of the remaining people on planet Earth today are from another star system, if you will, incarnating and living Earth human lives. So yeah, it's a fascinating topic. And this is not just my information. I've had this conversation with a whole bunch of people. Adana and her star ancestry work has come across, interestingly enough, a bunch of people who are from different star systems that have purposely chosen to come here. And these are people who are asking her questions, and they have an inkling. They know that there's something different about them. They've always had a sense that there are star people in their lives for one reason or another. And she's been doing a great job of giving those people clarity and specific insight as to who their star family members are, what star system they're from, what name the planet is, what people they're from, all that information. It's information that I don't have the time or the inclination. I just don't have the time to do. But she does, and she's really good at it. So, there are a lot of people coming to this planet. It's a great way to experience a whole bunch of things in a short time. Because, you know, an Earth life is, at the longest, on average, 75 years, 80 years maybe. Some a lot shorter, some longer, but on average it's a really short period of time. And the best analogy that I can give, it was one of my lessons when I was first starting this work, and it came up about 3 years ago. I had been asking, apparently I've always been a student of time, and I was asking the gentleman who's commander of the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere, I was yet again asking him about time, and I said, you know what, I'm going to ask this question from a different perspective. I'm going to ask this question from their perspective. So I said, hey, you guys tell me that I've been coming down to this planet for about 75,000 years. He said, yeah, that's accurate. You had some extra training that we had to put you through. And I'm like, thanks. But, yes, you've been coming to Earth for approximately 75,000 years. I said, okay, I'll accept that. Now, from your perspective, you guys, up in the Andromeda Council biosphere, a higher dimensional sphere with a whole bunch of people working in deep space, from your perspective, living a higher dimensional life, how long does it feel like for you guys that I've been gone? I said, oh, to use your terminology, kind of like a year and a half business trip. I was floored by that information. What he essentially did was tell me the difference between how we experience organic life. We think a lifetime is 75, 80 years. In 75,000 years, it feels to them like I've been gone a year and a half. That's what higher dimensional life is. And that's just kind of a rough approximation. He was trying to give me some kind of approximation so that I could be able to share with people what it's like to live a higher dimensional life. And that time, as we know it, is irrelevant up there. I mean, that means 100,000 years would feel like 2 years organically. That's what it would feel like to us. I was like, wow. So we've got a lot to learn about, you know, dimensional time and space and space travel and folding space, and just a whole bunch that we don't understand yet, but we will in time.
How long do these people live?
Well, I'll use Earth terms. So we have this organic human body. We've already defined how long typically that lasts. The slice of what some people call an oversoul, you know, the total soul, soul group, It only takes, and here's my analogy. Let's call the Oversoul an extra large 24-slice pizza. It takes about one slice, a piece of spirit essence, if you will, to animate a human body, to give it sentience. That Oversoul, that energetic life form, is infinite in its lifespan. Now, the evolution of that lifespan is, I'm going to have a whole bunch of lifetimes on this world called Earth, or Dakote, or any number of organic worlds where you can get a whole bunch of repeated organic life lessons as a 3D person in whatever shape, form, or color you happen to be. That spirit essence, slice of soul, gets to a point where they say, you know what, I think I've really learned as much as I can about 3D life. I think from this point forward, I'm going to become, and I'm going to stay, a higher dimensional person. So they decide to live as a 4D, fourth dimensional person. And again, this is only a rough approximation, but for approximation purposes, that person would then say, I don't have the words to say this, so I'm just going to try to say it. At some amount of time down the time track, like 7, 8, 9,000 years, as we might describe it, that person would say, you know, this has been a great ride. It's been an amazing experience as a 4D person. It's time for me and or my spouse. And we want to live fifth dimensional lives. We want those kinds of experiences. And they simply intend that they want to do it. And so, as an example, if you had a room full of fourth-dimensional people watching this couple, these two fourth-dimensional people waving goodbye, as they would wave goodbye and walk away, they would disappear. And they would disappear simply because they would be vibrating at a higher frequency and higher rate at 5D than they would at 4D, which is why they would appear to disappear. And so people, beings, do this as they evolve up the dimensional staircase, if you will, staircase of evolution. That's essentially the way I've been taught. I can speak pretty intelligently about fourth-dimensional life and fifth-dimensional life and the aspects of both of those realms. I'm aware of the other dimensions, but I can't speak with any real intelligence about them.
So the people on this biosphere that you were talking about earlier, do they have bodies? Physical bodies?
As a matter of fact, what we know here on Earth as the Andromeda Council, which is known out in space as... Sorry, let me try this again. It's known out in deep space by its ambassadors and diplomats as the Galactic Council. My understanding is that there's a handful of a relatively small number of third-dimensional organic races that are part of this council. But most of them, the bulk of them, are fourth dimension all the way up through ninth dimensional people, beings, if you will. The ninth dimensional ones are Arcturians. And their prime driving source, raison d'etre, you know, the reason to be, is love. They disseminate purity of a love through the other dimensions to other beings and help teach us to love to the best of our ability. But so to answer your question in short form, there are accommodations for 3D people. There are accommodations, vibrational frequencies available for working conditions for 4D, 5D, 6D, all the way through 9D on the primary Andromeda Council biosphere. There are five other biospheres that have different tasking orders. One is engineering. Another one is purely communications. I forget all of them, but there are also six of them that are dedicated specifically to helping people heal. We're talking now energetically, emotionally, spirit essence, psychologically. There are six, what we might call medical ships or hospital ships. And there are some what we would call human kind of higher technologies that help organic rebuilding, but there's a lot of sound, light, color, vibration, tone. There's a lot of energy work, technology-wise, that's used on these hospital ships for the healing of thousands and thousands and millions of souls. Because energy is like anything else, can become damaged. When it's exposed to too much of anything that's bad for it, it'll have toxic residue all over the person's spirit essence or their soul if they get abused enough. So that energy needs to be repaired, healed, transformed, transmuted. So it happens energetically for any of the beings in any of the dimensions. They can get regenerative work done on these different hospital ships. It's pretty amazing technology.
Well, Tolek, we are almost out of time. It's getting a little late on this end. Why don't you tell people about your coming events, your website, and anything else on your mind that you'd like to close the show with?
Sure. Before I do that, I really want to say thank you. Mark, you've come really well prepared. You've given me some great questions. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would like to let people know that this time of continued change that we are seeing, having to do with the weather, tornadoes happening in the Midlands of the country, in the Mid-South, 75-degree weather in Chicago in February, these are all indicative of the continued changes going on this planet. This gentleman named Donald Trump, who's been appointed as a president of decided change, social change and political change, and not only political change, the agencies and the laws, but he's going to be doing his best to rework the whole political system in this country. These are all indicative of the time of transition that I've been talking about over the past few years. So we're in it right now. It will continue to be a pretty amazing time, both the rest of 2017 and coming years. For people who are interested in this kind of conversation that you and I are having, they can go to the Andromeda Council website, and in this case, council, council.com. And if you want to learn about different events that I'm organizing, promoting, and producing, you can go to transformationalshiftevents.com website. There's a page dedicated to all of the USA special events. And they're predominantly one day. There are a couple of 2 days, but they're one day events starting June 3rd in Clackamas, which is the greater South Portland area, Oregon, on June 3rd, all the way through November the 11th in Sedona. There are a variety of events that are going to be taking place. You can find that on the USA Special Events page. On the conferences page, you can learn about the two conferences I'm producing, which will take place in Australia in October. And so we're going to be having people like Mary Rodwell and Marie Batchelor, Robin Sherrick. Whereas in U.S., I'll many times be having Native Americans speak for a spiritual foundation. Down in Australia, I'm going to be having the Aboriginal elders tell about their own star stories and what parts of their culture are really important to them in terms of honoring the earth and honoring their relatives. So those Australian conferences can be found on the conference page of the Transformational Shift website. Of course, there's a ticket page. When you need or want to buy tickets, you just go to the tickets webpage for that website and you can purchase tickets. Every one of the conferences has early bird and discount. Early bird advance purchase discount specials and multiple person specials. And I'm doing my best to price these conferences so that they're affordable as possible, so it doesn't cost somebody an arm and a leg to come to one of these things. So, my last piece of information is on every day of every conference or every day of every special event, the late afternoon will always have, whether it's informal or formal, a multiple person, multiple speaker panel discussion so that everybody in the audience can ask questions of all of us as speakers over the course of 2 to 2.5 hours. I wanted to make sure that there's a way to have an interactive dialogue between the attendee and the speakers. And it went really, really well in Tucson. I'm like, geez, if it went that well in Tucson, I would think that universally it would be something that people would like. So I'm making sure to do it at every one of these events. And Mark, like I said, if you want to travel across the U.S. this summer, you can be a guest at any one of my conferences. Just give me a shout and I'll make it happen.
All right, Tolek, thank you so much for coming on. Have a great evening, sir.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Take care.